Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, friends. This is Nick, and I'm here with my co-host, Terry, and this is Hell No, the Radio Show. Hell No, the Radio Show is a socially conscious water cooler talk show about what's going on in the world as we feature guests and callers who express their thoughts. Hell No is friendly, it's funny, it's real, and it's focused on empowering the truth. What we do is we give a voice to people who feel left in the dust. This program is not democratic, it's not fascist, it's not politically correct, or a place for sacred cows. What we do is we advocate peace, critical thought, education, reading, and social awareness. So go ahead and write down this telephone number and give me and Terry a call to share your thoughts on tonight's discussion stirring topics. Telephone number is area code 718-508-9419. And then when you're prompted in, dial option number 1 on your telephone keypad to be brought into the show. Again, that number is 718-508-9419. Hell No is a one-hour show, and we take calls in the order we receive them, so please sit tight. Of course, we can get email anytime at hellnoradioshow@gmail.com, and also find our episodes you can play on demand anytime on our Facebook or Twitter pages. Of course, our program is brought to you all from our loyal and loved and wonderful sponsors, and Terry's here to tell us about them now.
Our sponsor this evening is Life One Nutraceutical. It is a nutraceutical product. There's no pharmaceuticals in it, nothing prescription. It is an incredibly powerful immune enhancer. It has also got a very strong tonic effect on the body. And it's available soon. We're kind of putting the cart before the horse here a little bit, but it's available soon through our website, and that will be Life One Nutraceutical, Life One-Nutraceutical. So keep an eye out for it. It's a very powerful product. It's the product of years of research, both mine and Dr. Mike Farley. And we're going to be seeing it out on the market and out on the internet very soon here. Again, Life One, and look for it in about a month, maybe sooner. So, hello, Nick.
Hey, Terry, how are you?
Tired.
No, well, you're not the only person.
Yeah, I just
you don't have a patent on tired, man.
No, I just got out of the gym, so that's why I was a little tardy getting onto the air here, but pushing some iron around. So anyhow, on tonight's show, I really would like to skip some of the normal odds and ends that we do and dive into a couple of things. One of them is online dating, which we have talked about before, and the other one is communication problems, which we have talked about endlessly, and it doesn't seem to get better. It only seems to get worse. I went around interviewing some folks this week, various age groups, and what's interesting is 35 and under, they pretty much think there's nothing wrong. They're fine. There's no problem with communication. Once you get up to 40, you start seeing people who are saying, yeah, there are definitely some problems. Once you get 50, they say those people can't communicate to save their lives. They have no idea what they're talking about. They have no idea what they're doing. They're completely dysfunctional. And the various groups that I spoke to, it was truly amazing to me how blind people are to the voids in their communication abilities. You know, it's the old proverbial, wouldn't know an abominable snowman if you got in bed with him. And that seems to be the case. They're just completely blind to what's going on. I shudder to think of what's going to be happening in the next 10 to 15 years if communication keeps going downhill the way it is. Logic and reasoning, we might as well not even talk about it, because most of these people just have no skills whatsoever. The other thing is, I talked to a young lady who was in her 40s. She's going for a doctorate in neuroimmunology. And she's a very nice young lady, but what I will tell you is it's sort of like talking to a well-educated Valley girl. That's scary. I mean, she did everything but snap her gum at me. And this is someone who is going to be defending her doctoral thesis sometime in April. I'm really wondering what we're turning out in our institutions these days. I don't understand. I've lost the ability to figure out what in the hell is happening with all of this.
Well, they don't even know if they're men or women anymore, you know, much less. I mean, it's gotten to the, I'll tell you something that's, I've lost faith in the education system and some of the curriculum that's being taught. I know not everyone who watches our show is a fan of Fox News, but I'm a Fox News watcher, and Waters World is the one he interviews people on the street, but so one of the other guys has a segment about American college has gone completely kazoo crazy, wackadoo, you know, goofy stuff. And you look for things that we were traditionally taught in school, the traditional subjects, and there's not a lot of that. It's all, you know, do you want your name on your ID card to be this? I mean, it's crazy. And the thing is, the expectations of these folks is consistent with what they've been taught and spoon-fed for so many times, that all words matter, everything you think matters, everyone has this right to this, and it's this whole new different world view of things. And what you get then is this kind of existentialist thing where your opinion and your narrative is your reality, and people damn well better bend to it.
And I saw a bumper sticker the other day that I really liked. It said, no matter what you believe, science will still be based on facts. And, you know, I wish I'd been able to peel that off and put it on my own car. I would never take that away from someone, obviously. But I just thought, right on for you, buddy, whoever you are or ma'am. I'm really kind of at a loss, and I really would like to hear from any listeners that might want to call in tonight and, you know, take me to task on this, because I really am at a loss to explain where we're going to go, how we're going to go there, what we're going to do. This is really beyond. One of the things I want to cut in with.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I was just going to say that, again, especially when we're looking at the world of what's going on in current events and everything, depending on your narrative and whatever, it's kind of like whatever camp or tribe you ascribe to, you have a whole set. It's almost like having a new set of little different religions or this or that. This person thinks this and that. So you've got a schema, a framework, you know, whatever lenses you look through, everything is vetted based on their prior assumptions, whether those prior assumptions are true or correct or not. So I don't see how you can dial something like that back, because the fundamental understanding is flawed. And it's like trying to argue about the security of a foundation of a house that is built on pylons that's floating, you know, in a river or something. And, I mean, it just, you know, it's up and down. You have to get up and down correct before you can talk about this way or that way. And, again, I just think that it's to get people back to where you could have discourse over things with people of opposing viewpoints, you almost need to go back to, like, basic ground rules of, like, you know, I don't know, like the most simplest, I don't know the answer. It's very confusing. And what's the problem is, Terry, I think that a lot of people have just given up and they say, well, I'm not going to look beyond what my camp says or what their camp says. It's my way or the highway. And I have all these other people supporting me. It's like being in a country at civil war with each other, but we're not necessarily blowing people up in the streets just yet.
Well, it's not a civil war. It's an individual war. And people are at war with each other. And the least little thing, the tiniest slight to someone you just get shut down, shut off, and thrown away. And I don't get it. How do they ever expect to have a relationship with somebody that's going to be meaningful and last? You don't do that. You sit down and you discuss things. Different things.
Yeah, Terry, one of the things that you talk about frequently came up on an ad the other day about looking for people you know, it was, you know, info secure or something like that. Is it a person you're hiring? Is it someone who's going to clean your windows or babysit your children? Is it someone you're going on a date with?
Oh,
and
God,
again,
man.
You know, it's and God help you if you do not have a presence online, because you must be either you're either fake news or fake person or this, or you're a catfish. I mean, I get these all the time with people who they don't know anyone in common with me. None of their profiles feel that. You can tell when it's spam, you know, and it's usually, you know, like, they usually, a lot of them look like hookers. They're like, some of them are hot babes. One from Rosa the other day. Oh, gross. But, you know, if you don't have a presence online and don't have a Facebook, they say, who doesn't have a Facebook? What are you hiding?
You know, I saw something that was just plain disturbing. And this was on an internet dating site that a friend of mine was on. And this woman's profile thingamajig, in big letters it said, if you want to date me, don't think I'm not going to check you out in every possible way. You're going to have a background check done. And all I could think of is, fuck you, lady. Who the hell do you think you are? Who do you think you are?
You're single,
you know?
Because and all men are evil and bad. Why are all men evil and bad? Because you don't trust anyone. Because you don't even give the person to give. You know, it's stupid. It's like, where's the, you know, when I was a kid, back in, you know, not that long ago, but a while ago, you know, there was some intrigue in finding things out about people, and that's why you go on dates, you know. Now you go on a date, and they already know everything about you, and they have all these questions. So
it's
on your Facebook
desk,
or I saw this. Or they think they do.
They
and they may be
they
asking
do.
Leading questions. You respond to the questions they're asking. If you don't know what, you know, tree they've been climbing up on, or how it's greased, or what's at the top, or what's chasing them up there, you don't really know how to respond. So you could be walking into a trap. I mean, it's damn near impossible to only way I think to meet someone these days is through personal references of people you know and can judge for their character outside of all this other bullshit.
Well, I don't know how you do it then, because chances of doing that have diminished so greatly, Nick. You don't have the types of social activities that you had 25, 35 years ago. They don't exist anymore. They're gone.
Give me an example.
The various dances that used to take place. Nobody does that anymore. The clubs that people used to belong to, that things like 4-H clubs and things like that go on for the most part, except in some rural areas. But there used to be all sorts of things, the International Institute, where you could meet people from different countries. This stuff has all disappeared. And now you got the internet, the shallow, callow, pathetic internet.
Right.
It's beyond belief.
Well, check this out. Here's this example that happened today. So I'm a candidate for council in my town that I've talked about endlessly of how, you know, talking about pulling your hair out, my goodness. Well, someone wanted to slam another person's credibility and call their character into question. They went on an internet website and they pulled part of a quote from someone, put it in quotes, put it out there, and sent it to a bunch of people. And then the funny thing is, you know, sometimes people are stupid, because if you type in Google exactly what the quote is, you can see the source, and you can see that they intentionally leave out the sentence that precedes the information they quote, which says it's a disagreement from the majority of people. So, and the thing is, people don't know how to do their own independent double-checking of information, and it's, you know, you just have to say the stupid are just going to be stupid. I mean, I don't know what to do about it.
But the potentially smart ones are stupid. That's a huge part of it.
Well,
this
goes back
to
education. Education. If we're not teaching history, so we're not teaching history in school. So a lot of people think that everything happens in every new election cycle is the first time it's ever happened in life. And they don't really know any better if they're not taught otherwise, and they've never studied that stuff. So the only people who would potentially have knowledge are the people who independently educate themselves. You know?
I'm going to integrate the dating site thing with the communication thing, because it is just all one and the same. You can go through, I had a friend of mine take me through two of the sites that he's on, And I looked at them, and then I went to another person who had some other sites. What I have not seen and would like to see is the women's side of the sites. I can only see the guys' view, which is, of course, of the women. And
right.
But it's just sad. You might as well just do an overlay, and it's kind of like the old animation, you know, doing an overlay. You'd use the same thing over the same thing over the same thing. The amount of differentiation among the profiles was so minimal that it was like, what did we turn these people out with? You know, cookie cutters. They all sound the same. Everybody loves the beach. Everybody
right, well,
loves their family. Everybody wants to be involved in family activities. Everybody's children are incredible. Are you
kidding? Don't want us. They don't want. The thing is, too. You know, when doing these profiles back when, and I quit doing. I did one of those sites was Tinder. Before I even knew that, like Tinder is really just like if you want to go get laid site. Like I was actually looking for a girlfriend. People are like, you're stupid. Why are you doing that? But I'm like, okay. Well, if I know it, if it's just getting laid site, you know, well, okay, that's there. But so I remember doing it and. Asked a friend of mine, I said, what do you think of my profile? I don't know what to say here. I don't want to look like a pompous ass. I don't want to look like some provincial hillbilly idiot either, you know. And so, oh, girls want to hear this. Girls want to hear that. And, you know, oh, let me write it like this. And I thought it was helpful. And I'm like, oh, yeah, what else do girls want to hear? And it reminded me of my friend Terry Cullen, who told me about that book that people could buy that says, if you want to pick up girls, here's the lines you use and scam artist, blah, blah, blah. You know, or how about guys? I mean, I don't know any other guys who like, hey, what do you think about my profile, man? You think the girls are going to dig it? Like, I don't know. But I think a lot of with females, I think they all just copy each other because no one wants to stand out as being the weirdo. You know, they all want to conform. And there's just such a pressure of this, like, you know, consensus conformity again, regardless of whether which camp you are in. I can read these profiles and I can tell you just by certain keywords if the person is how I probably could tell you who they voted for president. I mean, it's gotten that stupid in our world.
Well, most of them have a thing in it about your politics, you know, what your politics are. But
get past that. Normally, that wouldn't come up in a relationship till after a while.
Right. Normally, these things. You know, the people put in one or two sentences, and that's about it. How the hell are you supposed to make a decision about anything? What I found, I went through conservatively 300 profiles, and I did it in preparation for the show. And I put, you know, dashes and dots on a piece of paper exemplifying certain things that were in these profiles. And about 97% were what I would call cookie cutter profiles. Scary, man. That is scary. I would have expected it to be, you know, maybe 65, 35, where you were seeing, you know, individuality really jumping out at you here and there. About 3% of those profiles, maybe 4, had some individuality and something that you might call intriguing. And then you run into the other part, which is the fakes. I learned from this buddy of mine how to spot the fake profiles, the ones who are thinly disguised call girls, hookers, call them what you will, or the ones that are catfishing. And boy, there's a ton of that out there. Really are. Then there are people who make their living hacking these sites. So it's just, my God, you know, everybody's so worried about meeting someone. What about what they're doing to you on the fucking internet, exposing you to all kinds of stuff that you don't know about? I'd rather take my chances with somebody on the street. Thank you very much. I can see them face to face and I can talk to them. You know,
right.
Perhaps I can learn something. Perhaps it'll work out for me that way.
Jeez, or perhaps perhaps you had a nice conversation with them and you found something that you had in common. And really hit it off, and then later you find out they voted a different way, and you're like, well, who cares? I still want to talk to this person because I think they're neat because I like the same thing. And now otherwise, if you otherwise had knew the stuff about them earlier, you never would have been there to talk to them in the first place because you would say, I'm not like you. I don't agree with you. It's not working out. And I could tell you that I've been guilty of exactly that. I'm guilty as charged too.
Well, before we go any further, I want to say two things. Important things. One, if you lose me, Nick, my signal is not the best tonight. I will call back in and get back on the air. So keep an eye if I'm suddenly not there. Keep an eye on that. And second thing is, hello, hello, are you there?
Can you hear me now?
Nick, hello, are you there?
I'm so here. Always
okay,
here.
I'm still here, too.
All right, good.
Okay.
I was joking,
all
by
right,
the way.
Now, thank
you.
All
time.
That's all I needed is a smile on the other end of the phone. The other thing is,
what the show is about.
We are talking about moving the show to a different night because a certain attorney friend of mine seems to have gotten himself embroiled in too many personal projects here.
Number one, I don't actively practice law. Number two, I'm just an active person, man. But
yeah,
I don't
control the schedules,
man. It's not
blah,
my fault,
blah,
man.
Blah, blah, blah.
We all heard that before.
Anyhow, if our listeners have any suggestions, change of time, change of day, we'd like to know about it. We really will look at your suggestions seriously. So please keep that in mind.
We got a hand raised.
Oh, we do. Okay, please. Throw them on.
All right.
Them.
Raise your hand and we bring you on the show. Here's someone who knows how to follow directions and their telephone number ends in 0619. What's up, buddy?
Good evening, guys. How's life?
Hey, how are you?
Life is good, like the bumper sticker says.
Yeah.
Did you put a rechargeable battery in tonight, Nick? You're kind of going full speed here.
Lots of coffee, burning the candle at both ends. I literally drank way too much coffee today.
Jalapeno sandwiches and coffee is what he's living on today.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah.
I had a question. I missed you guys the last 2 weeks. Was it?
Yeah, well, that's because we weren't there.
My fault. Blame me.
Oh, well.
Nick's fault.
I just knew that you were having some trouble with this, whatever it is
that you're on, you know.
So I didn't know what, you know, if it was ever you
ahead.
Or what.
Go ahead. No, no, please continue.
I mean, you know, I miss not hearing you. You're my kind of weekly listening board. You know, some people have sounding board. You're my listening board.
You know, I like
we were not on.
We weren't on, and it was my fault because of scheduling. And the one time I tried to actually bring my equipment and do it from the remote location in Dallas, but it just didn't work. I couldn't get a signal. But, you know, the way you say if it's a sounding board, I mean, there's times that, you know, it'll be in the evening and it's been a long work day. And, you know, it's work for both me and Terry to both take time off to do this show. And we talk about things, and Terry and I don't agree on everything in the world. And so I'm sure, you know, but the thing is, I always get different perspectives and unique perspectives from people. And I hear about things going on outside the little bubble I live in. So, you know, even that there's been days that I'm like, oh, crap, I don't want to do this show tonight. I'm always happy I did because either learned something, I had some comic relief, got a laugh, you know, or heard about something about tools somewhere that just is totally outside my daily realm of activity. And that's why I like doing the show. We've been doing this show since 2012 or 2013. I mean, I haven't stopped counting episodes, 200 or something like that.
13.
But
yeah,
as long
13.
As there's stuff to talk about, there's things going on. And I'll say this, too, about this program. Is that there? We know we've gone back, and when we started talking about politics and the election, it was around the time it was Obama and Mitt Romney, where that election was going on. And you know, we talked a lot about the apathy in the world and people not getting involved and people not taking a stance and people not invest. Now look what we have now. I mean, over the years of our show, we've seen a lot of things. Change, but there's a lot of things that are consistent that we've always talked about and continue to talk about, which is the breakdown of communication and this technology and internet putting a big clench around our throats.
How long would it take you to lay your hands on Communication Breakdown by Led Zeppelin? I think we need two musical breaks tonight.
Two musical breaks. All right.
We are just burning it here.
Can I lighten the mood here for a minute?
Yep, and then I got the song go. Yeah.
I meant to tell Terry I watched the Westminster Dog Show again. It's amazing how many breeds of dogs' lineage goes back to the not only the Mastiffs, but the Tibetan Mastiffs.
Well, they all, actually, every one of them. We now know that genetically every single dog goes back to them.
And I had another question. The other breed that I don't remember what they're called, the Dokai or something like that, is that there another breed of Tibet Mastiff, something like that?
I think I know what you're talking about. Terry dropped off. He'll pop right back. I know what you're what did you call it again? Dokai? I've heard of that.
Yeah, it's like a Dokai or something like that.
Yeah, I'm sure that Terry knows about that, and he'll build it right back. You know what reminds me of, I mean, outside of the dog show, is there's a lot that goes into that, and there's a movie that kind of spoofs it. You know, I'm not meaning to make light of it all, but I forget what it's called. I think it's called Best in Show, and it's got an all-star cast. And, I mean, it's a comedy about the dog show stuff. I think it's absolutely hilarious, but that's just an aside.
It's fun watching the dog show because they let you see the personalities of a lot of dogs. I mean, with the big herding dogs, they showed some of the big dogs just sleeping in between, you know, in between presentations and stuff. And nothing against the poodles that are all manicured and this and that, but you know, you see the dog, you see the real personality of the dogs.
Yeah, absolutely. And people don't realize how, you know, and it's not only dogs. People show, do you know they show chickens too?
I did not know that.
Yes, there was I saw some, it was after the Super Bowl or before or something, or maybe on Thanksgiving, after football, there was a program about these chicken ladies and the, you know, what they wash, they're giving the chickens baths in the sink and they're grooming the chickens, and the chickens do things too. They have, there was some guy who was a chicken farmer somewhere, and it was like the wattle, how much it, you know, angled over this way or that way was something, the way the feathers are. I mean, there was a lot to it. You know, and all, you know, other cattle, we just had the stock show and rodeo in Fort Worth, and, you know, the people out there showing their pigs, and, you know, you see them walking around training, and they got the little stick in there. They're tapping them on the shoulders and on the hind end to get them to, you know, walk this way, walk that way. I mean, I pretty much don't, I don't know if there are any animals you can't show, but yeah, the dog show is definitely, those are huge. And I had a neighbor when I was growing up who had Shelties, and they used to show them, and you know, there's so much goes into it, and they travel all over the place, which is another thing people don't realize. There's a lot of money and a lot of commitment that goes into this.
Yes, absolutely.
Did you ever show dogs?
Another thing I'm getting kind of interested in watching, at least,
yeah,
the Bronco Bull Rodeo. I mean, do bulls get trained, or they just have a burr under their saddle when they get, you know, when they're ridden, you know?
They are. What's kind of funny is that whenever you go to some of these rodeos, first of all, the bull is not, they're not injured. They're not, you know, they're responding instinctively to chase certain things. You know, they chase the, you know, the guys who are, you know, the bullfighters out there and the bulls, and they're dressed in the funny clown hats and all that. But they're also trained to follow cues and do certain things. So, for example, when they start the show out, you know, they'll have a couple rides, and then they'll bring the animal back out there. Terry, you're back with us. And so they'll bring the animal back out there, and they'll, you know, the announcer will be saying, oh, you know, he's a 2,500-pound, blah, blah, blah. And it'll put its face down in the dirt and rub its head back and forth and stomp, you know, on command, like it's doing a show. You know, so a lot of times when we go see these, they're trained actors, performers, and athletes all in one. It's really amazing stuff.
Didn't know what you were talking about because you lost me for a few minutes.
No, we were just talking about bull riding. That's, you know, where it goes sometimes.
Oh, okay.
We were talking about the dog shows, and then we're talking about showing chickens, and, you know, Terry,
well,
you can't leave us alone.
I went to a horse pull. Yeah, I went to a horse pull over this last weekend. And it's sort of pathetic. They have to continually announce that, you know, no horse is going to be hurt here. We're going to take every safety precaution. It's over and over and over. It's like these animal rights nut jobs have just made things impossible.
Right.
These horses are bred for that. That's what these horses do. And if you see what happens as soon as they're harnessed up, they are pawing and snorting and raring to go. If these horses are not exercised regularly, heavily exercised regularly, you have troubles with them, health troubles and other troubles, psychological troubles.
Mm-hmm.
These are athletes. These are like weightlifters, people who are, you know, constantly working out heavily. These things are absolute, incredible creatures that have been bred for what they do. That's what they've been bred for. That's what they do.
And you know, another thing, and it, in addition to that, people say, well, that horse wants to be out in the pasture. But you don't know that, because there are a lot of people who put horses on their properties to get the agricultural credit, reduce their taxes, and those horses are not getting the care they need. They're just, other people get them as a status. People who shouldn't have horses will get them as a status symbol to their neighbors. Look at my horse, pretty pictures of my horse. And the horse is, you know, unkept. It's probably depressed and sad. Its feet are probably have, like, hoof rot. And and it's really, really sad. And, you know, we're meanwhile, these animals in these shows that people are saying are so mismanaged, oh, bad, 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 are worth, like, boku bucks, you know? So, okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's time for a song. Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing, Terry, I meant to ask you about, what's the other breed besides the Tibetan Mastiff that's the Dokai or something like that? I apologize.
It's the Dokai, which is the larger form, and actually the original form of the Tibetan Mastiff, the Tibetan temple dog. It's called Dokai, D-O-K-Y-I. There's a lot of confusion about the nomenclature with those dogs. And if you go over to Tibet, it gets even more confusing, because people in various areas speak the language differently. The Tibetan language is very, very plastic. You go from one place to another, and one word that means something in one place doesn't mean the same thing somewhere else. So it becomes very, very confusing. But the Dokai was the original term for the Tibetan temple dog, and that was the big guy. They are about 10 to 15%, sometimes 20% larger than the Tibetan Mastiffs.
Wow. Is it a really rare dog now?
They've never been common. They're extremely rare dogs. There are maybe 350 of them, 400 in the world. They've never been common. Those are the ancestral dog. We've done DNA on them, and they come out, they type out about 98% identical to the Mongolian steppe wolf. So that's what we're looking at. They obviously came from the Mongolian steppe wolf a long time ago, probably 7 to 10,000 years ago, and maybe even longer than that. They are very much not like other dogs. They don't get all riled up when you come home at night, you know, and jumping up and down and wagging their tails and what have you. They'll open one eye and make sure it's you, and then go back to sleep again. These are extremely intelligent animals. They have the ability to discern things. They can count. That's one of the reasons that they were used for hunting herds. And they would know if there was a sheep or a goat missing from the herd and go get it and make sure that nothing got those animals. They would protect them. They're primarily a guard dog of one sort or another. Unlike the Neapolitan Mastiff, or Mastino, or sometimes called the Molossus, they were bred for war. That's the old Roman war dog, and they're probably the second oldest breed, although they've been modified in recent times by the interjection of other breeds. They were just about lost. And back in the 50s and 60s, there were some Italian folks who were very focused on rescuing the breed, and they did a pretty good job of it all in all, but they just didn't have much to work with genetically. So that's probably the second oldest dog in the world, is the Neapolitan Mastiff or Mastino.
Thank you.
You bet. Let's have some music, Maestro.
Absolutely. Let's do Communication Breakdown first by Led Zeppelin.
John Paul Jones, John Bonham, Led Zeppelin, Communication Breakdown. Some amazing stuff.
All right.
Some amazing artists. I miss
absolutely.
Those guys.
The hits just keep coming, though, because we also have... We have to find out where it is, because I think it's at the bottom. I had it all queued up. We had Cream. Cream, I Feel Free, another good one. Always
there we
a
go.
Favorite. This will always remind me of high school in 1994, looking for parking for my car, and I left my buddy's Cream tape out on the dashboard, and it melted, and I got in big trouble.
Thank you.
slept in your Baker. And you know who the third person was, Nick? Well, Nick, have you left the building?
I'm still here. Sorry, I put my mute button on because I had to print something. No, and I don't know the answer. 50 lashes and wear the hair shirt.
Oh, man.
Sorry, that's my printer. I know. I just...
Turning off your mic. I mean,
you know, I
so
learned
there,
it,
is
actually.
Is our caller still there?
Our caller's still there, yeah.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, do you know who the third person is in cream?
I didn't hear your question, but it was Ginger Breaker, Jack Bruce, and Eric Clapton.
Jack Bruce was the guy, yep. Jack Bruce did.
Now, let me ask this question, since we're kind of that age. Cream was only together for a few years, right?
Yep, about 3 years, yeah.
Can you imagine
amazing.
What they could have done if they would have stayed together for 10 years or something like some of the bands did, you know, like Zeppelin and Stones and, you know, some of the bands back then, if they would have stayed together for an extended period of time, could you imagine what kind of music they could have made?
Well,
not there's anything wrong with
maybe
split.
Maybe none,
but.
Because they fought like cats and dogs, especially Clapton. And Baker was no treat either. And Jack Bruce always wanted his way, so it was like a three-way cat fight. But yeah, they had tremendous talent, and they did great things. By the way, Zeppelin was not together all that long. If you look back, they did comparatively few albums. They're probably the single most famous rock group. The number of albums that they did, very, very few if you go and look at it. And if you take out things that are like British editions, compilations, remixed this and that, and the BBC sessions, you're down to, I'm not going to trust my memory on this, but I think it's like 9 albums that they did, 8 albums maybe. That's not much. Not much at all. Nick, why don't you check that one out and see what you come up with as far as how many albums, the actual different albums Zeppelin did. See if you can find anything on that. Yeah. Going back to our subject of people meeting people and people talking to each other and so on and so forth, we're really, you know, we have a paucity of opportunities. There's just not much there. There really isn't. Don't know what to do anymore.
16, 9 studio albums, 4 9 live
studio,
albums.
The nine studio albums are the only ones that count.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
yeah. The rest of the stuff was all, you know, this, that, and the other thing. But the number of actual different albums that they had was 9. That was pretty close. So anyhow.
That's a lot. Didn't they have, wasn't it one, what was it, Led Zeppelin 3 was like not released or released? Or wasn't there one that was like particularly something about it? I don't remember. It was, I remember when I was a kid, I remember Zeppelin 2. One of them, my mom told me that, you know, this wasn't released or it's, I don't know. If I don't know, just tell me to shut
either.
Up if I don't talk about it. Yeah. Shut up, Nick. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm fine.
Let's go back to communication. Let's the three of us talk about that here. You know, our caller, have you been in a dating situation in recent years? Caller?
No, I haven't. Not for many, many years. Quite honestly, I did get on a website. I did meet someone. We were boyfriend, girlfriend for a while, but now we're mostly just friends, which is just fine. You know, we have things in common and things apart. So,
Well. Nick?
Yes, Terry.
Are you there? Do you have
your mic
on?
I am. I'm always here. I'm just, you know, trying to wait to see if we could talk about the our passing personages thing for tonight, because Ivan Koloff, who was known as the Canadian professional wrestler, I don't think we talked about this before, the Russian Bear. He died in the ring February 18th after, in the ring he was called the Russian Bear. He didn't die in the ring, no, but he died after a battle with cancer. So... that's my contribution for our passing person. Just I got more information on him if you're interested.
Well, yeah,
there's another wrestler that died right at the same time.
There have been several that we've lost this year.
Several
of the pros.
Also, something that y'all might like, powerlifting and deadlifting came up in a podcast I did with some people in law enforcement, a fitness trainer. They're doing these tactical boot camp training things for law enforcement and first responders, and they're talking about deadlifting and all this other stuff and the different things that first responders have to be able to endure in the line of duty and all that. And I thought about friends on Hell Another Radio Show.
And that's connected
all the crossfitting
to what?
Contests, all the squatting and snatching and clean and jerk in these CrossFit contests too. It's you know, it's real encouraging to see.
Well, I was in the gym tonight trying to get back what I lost over the last 2.5 years since I was hit by the drunk driver. And surprisingly, I think I'll get within 15% of my best in the next 6 months. I'll bet you. I haven't lost that much strength. I thought I would have lost a huge amount of strength. But, I mean, I've lost a considerable amount, but not as much as I might think. Well, I guess that's a good thing. I guess that's a positive thing. So let's talk about weightlifting for a few minutes.
Go for it. We got time.
I know our caller has been involved in both weightlifting and judging and in helping to sponsor contests for young people. Where do we stand in Olympic weightlifting here in the United States? Do we have anybody who's even competitive anymore?
No.
That's what I thought. That's pretty sad.
No, nothing. Unfortunately, I mean, powerlifting, competitiveness, powerlifting is greater, but weightlifting, you know, the sport certainly hasn't by any means died, but no one is really making leaps and bounds to get better, to get world class.
That's such a shame because it requires so much skill. It's a skill sport as much as a strength sport by leaps and bounds. You know, you see some of these little guys locking out huge poundages, and you know that if they were off by a fraction of an inch, they would be laying there with dislocated arms or worse. It's just getting it in that groove, getting it perfectly lined up and powering it up quickly. You know, it's become more and more a finesse sport, unlike the days of Paul Anderson where you still included the standing press or military press. That's sadly has gone by the wayside because of the permutations that entered into it, people leaning back and sort of turning it into a standing bench press and so forth. When I'm in the gym, it takes everything I've got to keep my mouth shut. I see these guys and women doing these little partial movements constantly. I don't know who's teaching this, but my God, if you ever got Bill Pearl in there, he would be ripping new asses, I'll tell you. These people are screwing up their musculature. They're binding themselves up. They're causing all sorts of problems. And they're using these heavy weights, and they're moving them like 3 inches, and that's it. I don't know what they think they're doing because they're not going to have an effective muscle out of that. They're going to have a badly shortened muscle that's not working properly. There was an older woman in there who I'm guessing she was in her 60s, and she was the only one in the whole place that had good form. She was also extremely well-built. She was a small woman, but later on she mentioned that she had been world champion in her class in powerlifting at one point in time, but I didn't get her name. I'll probably try and talk to her another time when I'm in there. As our caller knows, I was involved in training a number of people over the years too. And if nothing else, I know the right way and the wrong way. I'll tell you, some of these guys are looking for, you know, the pump, and they're paying no attention to what the hell they're doing to their bodies. You ask them to try and reach behind their head, and they can't get their arm up that far. It's really sad. And I sit there and I watch them use weights double what they should be using for the exercise because they would never be able to do it correctly with good form. That's something.
It's funny you mention that because on YouTube, you see there's, you know, 30 categories for gymnasium weightlifting fails, and you see
mm-hmm.
these people who take, you know, 600 pounds off the rack to squat, and they can't even step backwards, much
yeah.
less, you know, even attempt. You know, they'd probably be lucky if they could squat 300 pounds. So
yeah.
where these people think, you know, I'm going to do a single squat, you know, I'm cold, I haven't lifted for 10 years, I'm going to deadlift 500 pounds. What good is that? What are you accomplishing there?
Yeah, I'll tell you, I watch these people and I watch them, and I so badly, especially the younger people, I want to step in and say, you know, please don't do this. You're screwing up your body. This is where weightlifting gets a bad name. You know, what you see in the gym is mostly bodybuilding, body sculpting, you know, weight losing, that kind of thing. And they're just doing it all wrong. They really are. I wonder if there's anybody out there who's really teaching anymore. You know, we've got all these personal trainers. Man, you want to talk about ignorance. Oi. Caller, what do you think about the personal trainer thing? You know, every gym has six of them.
Well, are they personal training for bodybuilding, weightlifting, just staying in shape? You know, they might be good at training you to stay in shape, to get your weight down a little bit, get your energy up a little bit. But if they're going to start trying to give you supplemental exercises for working on your bench press or, you know, the squat or, you know, things like this, they're lost. They have no idea what the right things to do are.
You remember Vince Gironda?
Yes.
Yeah, Vince Gironda was big on form. And he was known for being able to take some of these Hollywood actors and, you know, get them big in a hurry and sculpted in a hurry. And, you know, he knew his stuff. He did. Sort of a tragic figure in weightlifting. The man was very savvy about kinesiology and how the body worked and so on. Unfortunately, he had a big problem with liquor and a bigger problem with loneliness. A sad thing to see. So many of these guys end up as lone wolves. Do you remember Doug Hepburn from up in Canada?
Yes.
Yeah, Doug Hepburn, there are a number of lifts that he excelled at, one-handed presses and so forth. But the guy lived in back of a little storefront in a, you know, in a one-room shanty thing, and that was that. But the Mighty Adam, another case, same thing, lived in what amounted to a trailer with some of his memorabilia around him. I don't know why that happens to these guys. They end up the loneliest people on earth. It's pretty sad. You know, they have their moments of glory. I'm hoping that the people in the World's Strongest Man things are getting a little bit more recognition and treated a little better. And also, caller, you probably know that Bill Kazmaier worked for me for a while, the guy who is one of the announcers on World's Strongest Man. Probably the
yep.
worst job anybody ever gave him. he's a terrible announcer. He's just awful.
Yes.
Sorry, Kaz, but he sounds like a tin can. He really does. But, you know, he made his way.
Back in the late 70s, up north Wisconsin, there was a powerlifting meet. And back then, for the super heavyweight squat, I'm going to say the record was, you know, let's say 720, 730. That's
mm-hmm.
just a number. I don't know how close I am. Bill Kazmaier was there warming up. This was an extra lifter. He wasn't in competition because he wasn't living in Wisconsin. But they lowered the bar to 750, and he doubled it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he was drugs, he was great, but he was strong.
Yeah. We also had a remarkable power lifter who, if he hadn't screwed himself up, Mike Morgan, otherwise known as Bubba Morgan,
yep,
had the widest shoulders of any human being I've ever seen. He was about 6'8", and just had freakishly wide shoulders. He had the most extreme V taper to his body that I think I've ever seen on a human. And
he had to go through a doorway sideways.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Literally, he'd have to go through.
I know.
A door side.
I hung out with him for a bit, and yes, I know all about that. He did. He was just a monster. And had he stayed at it, and had he trained properly, and had he not started doing drugs, I think that he would have been one of the most successful lifters ever, especially from that era. Kazmaier looks like 80 miles of bad road these days. When you compare him to somebody like Bill Pearl, who, you know, is in his 80s and looks not bad at all. You know who I haven't heard about, and I'm going to ask you, and folks, I'm sorry we're going off on these tangents here, but we're kind of reminiscing about some of the old-time weightlifters. Who was the guy that worked for Bob Hoffman? John? He was like Bob Hoffman's right hand.
Like Szymanski or something?
No, not Szymanski. He lifted with him, but, oh, man, I can't think of the guy's name. Anyhow, I'm wondering if he's still alive. The last I heard he was, but Hoffman died a long time ago. Bob Hoffman, for those of you who don't know who he was, he founded York Barbell Company and the York Barbell Gym. And he was a very crazy guy, but he did bring something to the sport. He had a huge ego, a very egotistical fellow. So, anywho, yeah. Them was the days. And what was interesting.
It's good to reminisce.
What was interesting is Paul Anderson, who up until recently, many of his lifts were not exceeded, did not use drugs, and didn't have all the benefits of the wraps, the supersuits, and everything else that the guys nowadays wear. One has to wonder where everybody else went wrong. How did they turn a healthful sport into a drug sport? Probably more weightlifters get busted at the Olympics than just about any other, although I guess that's changing too. There's so many other groups that are using drugs now and trying to do doping and all the rest of it. It's pretty sad. I wish we could go back to looking at it as a health culture thing to do, where people were less concerned about how much they could lift and more concerned about flexibility and creating a pleasing appearance for themselves, doing the best they could with what they have.
That is the nice thing about weightlifting is you don't use super suits, you don't use super shirts, you don't use super wraps. It's you might have an advantage on your something, but you know it's nothing. There's no added help. You do it or you don't do it.
Yeah. That's right. And with that, we're out of time.
All right, guys. See you next week. Thanks, everybody.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
See you later. Have a good night.